everyone. Thank you for joining us this morning and being here so nice and early. So I first want to thank Dr. Horwath for inviting me to speak today. So this is something that I've dedicated most of my time as a postdoc working on. And Dr. Horwath did a good job sort of putting in perspective for California, and at UC Davis I'm working on almond systems in California. And so I have some preliminary field data, but I would say that's probably about half my presentation. The other half is sort of trying to put this in perspective. So there's a lot of kind of introductory information. So I'm going to take the opportunity here to explain it, because it puts a lot of this into context of why it's not as simple as taking all this organic matter, putting it on farms. There's a lot of other sort of things that you need to consider. I'm a postdoc researcher at UC Davis. My mentor is Patrick Brown, and we're both in the Department of Plant Sciences, and we partnered with Stephen Hart, who's an ecologist at UC Merced. So today I'll be talking about organic matter amendments and what we call integrated nutrient management, and we'll be talking about California almonds. So not only do we have a strict greenhouse gas regulation, we also have very strict water quality regulations as well. So the big problem that we're talking about here is 30% of the wells in the San Joaquin Valley exceed the EPA drinking water standard for nitrate. So for about 250,000 people, that's considered to be unsafe drinking water. A lot of this has to do not only with how nitrogen's managed naturally, but it could also be a lot of legacy effects. So how we were managing a nitrogen fertilizer 30, 40, 50 years ago, and we're now seeing that as a real problem. We need to address that. So a lot of the emphasis now in the regulations is for farmers and consultants along with farmers to take voluntary steps to manage nitrogen more efficiently, and there's a lot of different training programs and approaches to do that, and myself as an educator as well, and Patrick Brown, my mentor, are very heavily involved in that education and outreach. So this is the real sort of emphasis that we're thinking about when we're considering using organic matter amendments in these systems. So keep in mind that almonds are almost the single biggest user of nitrogen fertilizer in California, and I'll talk a little bit more about the sort of facts about almond orchards. So one solution we're thinking of, it's kind of this, to put in really simple words, let's spread it around a little further approach. So I'll put that into a better understanding. So yes, there is diversion of green waste, but we also have the largest dairy producers in the United States. So if this was a milking barn and we're seeing manure coming out in two different forms, so this would be a lagoon water, and a lot of this lagoon water is going on to like a silage crop of this sorts. And then over time, sort of also these legacy effects have resulted in a lot of manure just applying to land to get forage and almost being used as a way to just sort of get rid of manure and using land to do that. And of course, it would lead to results where we're just applying way more nitrogen that's being taken off. So there's a large gross imbalance. So the idea here is if lagoon water is continuing to be applied to silage crops and growers are starting to dairy farmers are starting to separate the composted manures out, the question is, can we use these composted manures on orchards? And the reason why it sort of makes sense logistically is because within the mosaic of a Central Valley where there's many different crops growing but dominated by tomato fields and almond orchards, and then within it all these dairy farms, the sense is if the dairy, over time, if we've concentrated a lot of that manure on a dairy farm and the land surrounding that dairy farm, is there a way that we can use that to spread it out onto larger areas of land, in this case almond orchards? So the studies I'll be talking about are really focused on what is considered supplemental approaches. So we're adding manure in addition to the fertilizer that growers are already using, because we want proof of concept. We want to demonstrate that these materials work. You can actually use them, with the hope that over time that we'll move into substitution approaches. So now we're actually substituting manure for fertilizer that an almond farmer would apply anyway. And the hope there is that over time then we would be actually reducing the total amount of fertilizer that's going onto the landscape. So again, when I'm talking about the introduction to this project, it seems kind of simple. Let's take this stuff and let's put it on orchards. But it's kind of, we wanted to get a better sense, because if you want to scale something and you want people to, like growers and the communities that support them, like ourselves, if we want them to really be on board with it, we want to get a sense of what they're doing, what's going on. So we did a large grower survey. I literally have this paper on my laptop ready to submit it to today, maybe later today, but it should be published, you know, probably next year sometime. So we sent out a survey to 6,000 addresses of almond operators, orchards. So that's a fairly sizable population. We got a 27% response, and of those that sort of told me how many acres they farm, that was about 33. So we're about covering 33% of 1 million acres in California. We asked them a series of questions about benefits. Number one, they would say the benefit of using these materials is soil biology concerns. Number one by far is food safety, which is a huge concern because almonds are harvested from the ground. And there were questions kind of different populations about users or do you not use them. We found that non-users reported poor access. So when we asked them, tell us what your access is to these materials, they reported poor access. So that kind of leads us to believe it's not necessarily an undesirable view of practice of using this. It's maybe they can't get it or they don't have the spreader and they don't know how to do it. So there's a lot of opportunity there for outreach and education. The greatest use is in the North San Joaquin Valley. I had a map of California, but that's sort of not necessarily where Davis is in Fresno. It's kind of between Davis and Fresno area. And what's really important, so when I say organic matter amendments, it's kind of an umbrella terminology for all composted, uncomposted, green waste, manure. So it's kind of an umbrella term for all of them. But what we found from growers is they mainly are using composted materials. So they're that, and we really concluded that's the evidence based on this number one concern for food safety. So there really is an emphasis on using composted materials, aged materials, not necessarily applying raw manure to the field. But what makes this very different in California and why we sort of initiated this work is because there's been a lot of work done in vegetable crops, like tomatoes and applying compost. So in a tomato crop, you would potentially apply compost to the field, till it into the soil, and plant your tomato crop, right? But we don't have that opportunity in orchards. What happens in orchards is the materials, there's a tree berm that's kind of mounded up between where the tractor drives, and that berm is typically kept clean, right, because that's where a grower is going to be applying water and fertilizer and mostly herbicide spray because they want to keep the weeds away. But that's also where, if you apply a lot of water and fertilizer in an irrigated setting, that's where the tree roots are going to be. So if a farmer's saying, I'm going to put an investment in using these materials, they're going to want to apply it on that berm. But we don't have the opportunity to incorporate it. So we're in this conditions that are very different from an annual cropping system where it's really just a thick layer of mulch that's applied onto a concentrated part of an orchard. So you come up with this sort of dynamics that are going to be sort of very different than thinking about it from an annual cropping perspective. A lot of the materials are being applied in dormancy, so starting around now in October, and pretty much up until you can't drive a tractor in the field anymore because it's too wet. And then if they haven't got any materials in, they might kind of do it in this period and sort of early spring. So that's an overview of what's going on and how we wanted to approach this. So we have some working hypotheses. The one main working hypothesis with relation to our interest of nitrate leaching and nitrate movement is, if we're going to increase soil carbon, can we eventually stabilize mineral nitrogen? So is that mineral nitrogen that's mineralizing from compost, or because these are integrated systems, almonds use a lot of nitrogen fertilizer, can we also stabilize that mineral nitrogen from the fertilizer itself? So we do have the luxury of doing split applications because a lot of the fertilizer is being applied through the irrigation system. But what still happens is when growers do apply fertilizer, they can apply up to 20, 30, 40 pounds at once. So the capacity for an orchard tree to take up that fertilizer is going to be related to how much they are irrigating. So there's a wetting and drying cycle going on. So if we're applying a lot of mineral fertilizer by using low rates of organic matter amendments, and when I say low rates, it's equal to about 9 megagrams per hectare, or about 4 tons per acre, which is kind of a low rate. The sense is, can we sort of start to stabilize mineral nitrogen, as opposed to it between coats being a leaky system, meaning we're applying fertilizer and it's just sort of leaking out. So by adding OMA, we'd be increasing soil organic carbon. We could potentially increase net nitrogen immobilization, so we could be over time start to retain more of the nitrogen. Overall, that would then start to grow a total nitrogen pool. And then with the emphasis over time is then, can we eventually then reduce the amount of nitrogen fertilizer we're applying? So these are really great working hypotheses when communicating in meetings like this, but when I speak with growers or if I do education or outreach, I like to put it and sort of frame it into applied questions or as well. So one applied question is, can we retain excess nitrogen beyond crop uptake? So that nitrate that's stored in the soil, can we sort of have a strategy by using these materials to retain that? Can the use of OMA make a fertilizer slow release? So if you're applying a fertilizer, it's not long the tree's fulfilled its demand. Can it sort of be retained within the soil and then re-released later within slow release within quotes? Because that's sort of a way that growers can sort of understand it. And are there other nutrient benefits from OMA use? So if I went around talking about compost and organic matter, only talking about nitrogen, it's a big issue, but that doesn't mean that that's only what growers are thinking about, right? So they're going to be thinking about other nutrients. They're going to be thinking about phosphorus and potassium as well as water. So water is also a big issue. So the approach we took in 2015 when we initiated a study and we did this approach again this year is we used a combination of resin stakes provided by Western Ag, which is a really great company to work with, and then ion exchange resin beads. So what we did is this, we applied intact cores into an orchard with the hope that we'd be excluding the almond roots. So the primary approach we wanted to do is say, what is the overall nutrient availability from applying these materials versus a control where it's just getting regular fertilizer? And as I mentioned earlier, this is supplemental. So in the treatment, this is just going on in addition to the same amount of fertilizer that the grower is applying. So what we wanted to get a sense is sort of the dynamics between the above ground availability of nutrients and the movement of nutrients sort of to about 50 centimeters. Which in a young orchard, that's sort of an active growing root zone. Even in older orchards, you know, orchards can be taking up nutrients from far deeper, but we've done some study with 15N and other things in my PhD work that shows that still this 50 centimeters is a highly active zone for where almond trees will be taking up nutrients. So the question there is that over time, the cumulative amount of nutrients that moved through the intact core and adhere to these resin beads. We mainly looked at nitrogen, though we would probably look at other nutrients. And then what is over time being adhered to a resin stake at a more an upper topsoil effect. So it's this effect of what's happening on the topsoil and what's moving through the rooting zone. The other treatment, as you said, as I mentioned, we applied the two treatments, of one with compost and manure and the other with a green waste compost. And we have used just sort of a modified litter bag approach. So the same concept of putting leaf litter into a litter bag and burying it into the soil and then watching and then collecting them over time. We did the same type of concept, except this was sort of an open litter ring of a PVC pipe attached to a mesh layer of about 1/32nd of an inch wide. So fairly small, but still sort of big enough where arthropods and other, like detritivores, could go up there, take compost, and move it down into the soil. And what I did over time is the stakes were changed out every single month for 6 months in the growing season, so we got a cumulative amount as well as sort of in-season dynamics. And then every time I did that, I also picked up one of the litter rings and measured how much organic matter was still in that litter ring. So over time, the decomposition of that organic matter allowed me to calculate a decomposition curve. So just more into the approach about essentially what measurements I did and the, sort of the results will be coming after this. So I just looked at analysis of total soil carbon and nitrogen from the sort of 0 to 50 centimeter depth, which I'll call active rooting zone. We looked at decomposition of organic matter and the release of nitrogen. And we still have these samples available, so we could look at release of phosphorus, potassium as well, if those sort of nutrients come to surface as being also really important. We looked at inorganic nitrogen availability in the topsoil, and that would be to nitrogen that adsorbed to resin stakes. In addition to the topsoil measurements, we looked at the availability of PK, calcium, magnesium, iron, and zinc in the topsoil. And what I call potential nitrate leaching is really the organic-inorganic end that adsorbed to those resin beads. So when the core is applied, put into the ground and incubated for 6 months, the resin beads are intact the entire time. So when you collect a resin bead and measure how much nutrients had adsorbed to them, that's really over a whole period of time that the researcher can determine up front. And finally, what I call net nitrogen mineralization is basically the soil from 0 to 50 centimeters. It's the change in inorganic matter from April, when I started the project, in the up until October. So before I put the core into the ground, I took a soil sample, analyzed it for its nitrogen content, incubated that intact core in the field, and then collected it, looked at the nitrogen content in the core. So let's just jump right into the results. So this is a table that's basically showing the control, the compost and manure, and the green waste compost. In April, the total organic carbon and total organic nitrogen were not significantly different, and that makes sense because we just initiated the project. So we want to make sure our randomization scheme, replicates, et cetera, were all good. And then what we saw over time is that there was an increase in total organic carbon, as well as total nitrogen, and both of the OMA treatments were significantly greater than the control. So remember, as I was talking about the litter bags that we use, they have this sort of mesh layer, and 1/32nd of an inch, you can see that. It's not like it's a membrane that you can't see. And what I did notice is as I picked up these litter bags over time, there was a very fine layer of organic matter there. So I would in no way, shape, or form suggest that this increase in carbon is sequestered in any way, right? Because it's material from the compost that's sort of moving into the soil. So when you remove a litter bag from the surface and I sample that soil, there is a very fine layer of compost there. And I consider that to be soil. But really, it's particulate organic matter. And if it really, you wanted to say it was stable carbon in any sense, it's probably not. It's probably just nitrogen carbon that's going to mineralize later on in the system. But what we do see clearly is that when you're applying these materials, you are seeing an increase in total organic carbon, total nitrogen. Now, how long-lived is that going to be? That sort of remains. We'll have to look at different techniques over time. So from every month that I was out in the orchard collecting these litter rings that I put out in April, over about 200 days, we analyzed sort of the mass loss of this material. And then this curve, I looked mainly at nitrogen. So the material, I have another curve that shows the mass loss of the material itself, and then you can look at other nutrients, but mainly focused on nitrogen for this talk. So we looked at the total nitrogen content, and what we're clearly seeing is there's an exponential decay, you know, where it's quickly being lost in April and then slowing down towards the end of the season. And the difference between where it started and where it ended was about 80%. So in a growing season for almonds, almonds are harvested sort of around August, September, so it's kind of like a beginning of the season into like sort of a post-harvest period. We're seeing that the nitrogen that contained in these 4 tons per acre, 9 megagrams per hectare, 80% of that nitrogen was released, or it was passed through that mesh layer. There were no significant differences between the source of compost that was applied. And what we do is up here is there's a K value of negative 0.01, so that would be 1%. So the way to simplify that, think about that, is that every single day that there was a mass of organic matter present, the day after it, 1% of the nitrogen was released. So it's kind of an easy way to think about it, that any given time, the total pool on that day, 1 day later, 1% was released. It's a smaller pool, and then 1 day later, 1% is released, et cetera. Well, so let's, now that we've sort of looked at the total picture, we've started at the litter bag level, and then we're kind of looking at the topsoil now. We want to get a sense of what's going on with the iron exchange resin membrane. So these are cumulative numbers. So there were 6 set of resin stakes that were applied for 1 month throughout the growing season. When we look at nitrogen, there were no significant differences, but what does jump out is that in the OMA treatments, they were lower than in the control. So that leads us to believe that, at least in the topsoil layer, that there is some sort of a mobilization of nutrients, nitrogen from the OMA or nitrogen from fertilizer that was applied in the treatment as well, being immobilized in the topsoil. What becomes even more interesting is when we look at other types of nutrients, like phosphorus and potassium, we see significant differences in the OMA treatments. Not for calcium, magnesium, but for zinc and iron, we also do. So it kind of gives you a sense that we're not necessarily just looking at nitrogen fertilizer here. We're also looking at other nutrients, which are important to growers and to almond orchards. If we look at the results of accumulative amounts, so the black area here is what I mentioned, the potential nitrate leaching. This is the amount of nitrogen that adhered to the resin beads, corrected for the amount of soil in the core. We saw that there was no significant differences in the treatments as well. So the thought that if we're seeing in the topsoil that, well, there's lower nitrogen from the OMA adhering to the resin stakes than the control, one might argue, well, it's just leaching away, you're losing it. But it's very clear that this is not being leached. There's really no significant difference in the amount of nitrogen that's moving through that core and adhering to those resin beads. What we do see, so the cumulative values here are not significantly different, but what we do see that when we look at the 0 to 50 level here, that we are seeing higher levels in the manure of the amount of nitrogen that was in that core over time. So keep in mind that this was excluded from roots, so it was just nitrogen that was accumulating in that core. So our conclusions are that we see a significant increase in total organic carbon and nitrogen in soils from OMA use. 80% of the nitrogen from OMA was released within the growing season of an almond orchard. There were no differences in N availability. However, there were significantly greater P, K, iron, and zinc from the application of OMA. We feel like N is being retained in the topsoil, but it's also not being leached. But there also could be more nitrogen potentially available if you're looking at the whole active rooting zone. We do sort of see this potential for future reductions in chemical nitrogen fertilizer over time. And what we want to do, of course, is outline other associated co-benefits, so be it micronutrients. And we have another study going on where we're looking at water and water soil moisture. And I think that's... I just want to acknowledge my mentor, Patrick Brown, and Steve Hart from Davis and Merced. We're working closely with USDA ARS in Albany, California, looking at pathogens. Because that's a really big issue. We have to make sure all of our work is food safe, really. Also want to thank Gabriel Lugo from the Almond Board who envisioned this project. We're working with Brent Holtz, farm advisor, Hannah and Juliana, who help a lot doing research in the field. And of course, you always have to think about the collaborators. So these are a nice family in the Central Valley that were just so happy for a postdoc and his colleagues to come to his farm every 2 weeks and be in his orchard and take all these measurements. Thank you all for your time. I think we have a few minutes for questions. Because almonds are shaken, and then the whole nut crop falls to the ground. And because it's not incorporated in the soil, there's going to be contact between the fruit that actually is split. So the kernel you and I eat is actually visible, and the organic matter can still be present on the ground. And even if it's compost or it's composted, growers are still weary because it's the biggest risk is that you send your crop in to the buyer and he says, oh, we found salmonella, here's your whole crop back, and you lost your entire income. Yes, in the back. So I didn't go into like the lingo, but I say green waste compost is from a composted facility that's certified compost. But I don't say the manure is compost. I say it's composted manure. So dairy farmers are not going in measuring the temperature to make sure it's compost. The dairy farmers are just turning it. So it's composted manure. So I'm not certain if that manure would really be compost. But we do have it tested for pathogens like E. coli, Salmonella, Listeria before we apply to the field, and we found that they were all free of it. And I also can report to you all that all the fruits from this year were free of pathogens as well, which is really good news. So I'll stick around through the rest of the session, so if you have questions, I'll be available. Thank you. Thank you.